dentist.
Okay.
Oh, really?
New York dentist. So this, so reserve the match.
Okay.
Which one are you?
Dynamic. Dynamic. Pick one randomly. You'll time me?
No. No, I don't care. We live all day, so.
I know.
I like the discussion.
Where's Mike?
Okay, so our second presentation in this session is by Kostas Gulias, University of California and Santa Barbara.
Beautiful Santa Barbara.
I like that. Journalist.
Sir, do you have any control over the temperature settings in this room?
Oh, I was going to do that as soon as Kostas got started.
Oh, they did it for you because they said you're coming from the north. Maybe you want some. Oh, it's San Francisco.
I'm used to air conditioning.
You know, I do have a theory that in kind of hotter, high humidity locations, they have to crank up the air conditioning more.
I might be sitting in like a draft.
From a guy who's lived in Florida and Arizona.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you have to move somewhere away from that.
It's where it blows on you.
Oh.
It's
angular. Yeah.
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 We're
spending
all
here. I enjoy sitting here.
If you go where Kuros is, it's going to be a high heat place. So, all right, since I have the floor,
yes.
I'm going to make a couple of comments for Harry. Actually, I should talk about my stuff, but it was so interesting. Actually, flexibility, we are discovering lack of flexibility in scheduling and location is not due to work, but to school. And those of you that have kids know very well that if you don't get your kid by 8 o'clock at the school, you are in big trouble with your kid, with your partner, and with the authorities of the school. So there are different constraints, actually, that are emerging. The other part is, now that I saw Harry's presentation, I want to change the whole thing. Besides, I forgot what I had to tell you. And I'll do my best to link again to the type of work that we are doing with Ram and Chandra, actually, in California, but also some other work that comes from California. Josh asked me to come up with a sexy title in 5 seconds. So the top one is the 5-second title. But then rethinking about it, I added accessibility, time, space, prisms, choice sets, and related issues. And in fact, we're going to be talking about all these things today. So before we go through some details, maybe we want to review the emerging schema that we face in the United States especially, and all the usual suspects are around the room, so you know this about your models, and also a typical emerging data collection that we see, especially for behavioral data and for household types. And then talk a little bit about behavior in space and time. We often talk about time, we forget space. I'm in a geography department, and they make sure I remember space is important. And then modeling the environment and the agent. We have 30 years of fairly sophisticated modeling of human decision making, but we forgot to model well the environment in which the human decision making takes place. And accessibility is one of the indicators we use. And then talk a little bit about integration needs, and not necessarily in this order. I will intersperse different concepts here and there, and then certainly computational issues. Now that we are running a big model with Chandra and Ram, we realize that if we tell the client that one of the modules of our model is going to take a week, they laugh at us and they say nope. If you want the continuation of a project, you have 1 hour. So the context within which all this work, actually all these ideas came out, is this monster, the Southern California region, which I discovered actually is the size of many European countries. We are simulating statically generating 18 million people, so you can make your calculations if you are from Europe. It has 191 cities. It's important to know how many cities you have because land use decisions are in the hands of the cities in the United States. And it has a phenomenal racial and ethnic and economic diversity. So the typical schema, we call it SimAgent, but you can call it anything you want. In fact, even California itself has different species of this. We start with a synthetic population. You create every human being, every household in the region. We come up with some kind of idea of how accessibility will change by time of day. That will show you an example. We have long-term choices. This thing doesn't like me. We have long-term choices included in the models, which means where do people live, where do people work, and where do people send their kids to school or themselves go to school. Predict car ownership and car type. 716 combinations between make, model, and year. And we do that. We have to do this in California because we have to predict the fleet of the vehicles that will be running from now until 2035 to come up with emissions. And emissions do not change only based on the type of car you drive today, but also the type of car that you will buy in 10 years from now and will have a completely different technology dictated by the state of California. And then we simulate activities and travel scheduling. We do it the SEMDAP way, which means generation of activities and then scheduling of the activities with a consistency check on whether or not the schedules of activities and travel of people within the household make sense. And before that, we allocate actually vehicles to the person that will take care of the person that need rides to go to different locations. And then we do the routing and assignment, and we do it with three ways. One is the one that Harry mentioned. We summarize all the activities into origin destination matrices, merge them with the trucks, merge them with the out of the region travel, and do a static assignment in four different periods. The second one, we ran successfully a Transims application. What a pain, but it worked. So in that one, we do routing in essence, and we do routing from point of a network to point of the network. And that takes about 4 days to run. And then we did also, I think we finished, right? An application with Matching. So we can compare all three, but we were so ambitious that now we added also Dynasty with Gitchen to who is going to be talking in this conference about it. And the idea of doing all four different methods of assignment is exactly to test what Harry was talking about. Do they make sense? Do they all make sense? When do they fail? How do they fail? And at the end, we do energy consumption and emissions using different interfaces again. And one, of course, is the emission factor 2011 software of California Resources Board. But right now we're doing second by second or based on profiles of speed estimation, and I won't tell you the horrible stories there. Anyway, we take the first year, we evolve the population, we evolve the urban landscape, we evolve the infrastructure by 1 year, and then we come back to the next year, and we keep going year after year after year until 2035, when is the target year for this region. So you can imagine the issues. I knew Mike would be here, and so I said, all right, I'll show one of the videos that he put together for us. The videos don't work, Michael. So he's going to show in his presentation the animation of Xenozone. But it's pretty cool. Wherever I saw that, people said, yeah, I like that, a real model. But you are professionals of models here, so I want to show it to you. All right, so what are the data needs out of all these? Well, we have some core elements. The behavior of and the behavior and the household characteristics is very, very important, of course. but also things like cars and costs, long-term choices, lifestyles, maybe attitudes. We do not use attitudes yet, but we're there. And then other agents. And it's very interesting that we always talk about households and persons as agents, and we forget about what is referred to as the supply. Well, opening or closing your store is an agent decision. And if you have high demand, you stay open a little bit later. Our models don't have that. Right. So maybe what we are facing is a need to come up with different agents interacting and playing different roles. We do it in land use models. UrbanSim does it, for example, by having developers. Our supply does not react, as far as I can tell, in our activity-based models. The only reaction we get is congestion on the roads with some kind of performance function on a link. That's all it does. So the context, what is the context that we should be looking at are the activity locations when they become available, the homes, jobs, schools, the availability over time. So we have to collect the data for that. In addition, now we see emerging a new paradigm. Maybe this is not it because I made the figure, but it's something similar. The core are household, person, and base diary data, but then we want to know something about long-distance travel. We definitely do that for the California Household Travel Survey, which is going to feed the new generation of activity-based models there. We want to know more about location choices and activity satisfaction or in-depth car ownership and use, and all kinds of other things, including GPS and GPS onboard diagnostic tools to not only verify and cross-validate with diary data, but also to find out how exactly do people drive their cars. When do they accelerate? When do they decelerate? And those have implications for environmental emission prediction, so we need to know it. So this is expanding. The modeling domain is expanding, but also the data collection domain is expanding. So let's go back to the land use, because land use is extremely important, at least from the state where I'm coming back. These are the many D's of policy. Actually, these are mentioned in all the policy documents that all the MPOs need to consider in terms of scenarios of behavioral change. So they want us to assess what will do density, diversity. Diversity, the equation is missing because I did something wrong, but in essence it means how many different type of activities you can do at specific locations, design, which is a very, very micro detail, and destinations. So the bottom line of all this is that we need extreme spatial detail. We cannot get away with the zone, and we cannot get away with skin trees anymore. We have to do something more. In log sums might be one way, but there are way too many of those. So what we wanted to do is to develop a very, very detailed map of the entire region that we are analyzing. I'm going to skip all these words and go straight to this. But we also wanted to create this special detailed map for destinations by having sensitivity to the travel time on the network. So in essence, we define accessibility in a slightly different way. It's a network-based buffer of activity opportunities that a person can reach from an origin within a certain amount of time. So on the left-hand side, if it is the uncongested period, off-peak period, you can reach more locations. Underneath that shaded area, you can count whatever opportunities you have, and you got your accessibility indicator. But also, this will change during the peak period because you have lower travel time, but also because the stores might be closed or open. So if you track the opportunity, the availability of opportunities by time of day, in the wee hours of
you know, after midnight, you have less people actually in a certain industry arriving to work, and it's a good indicator of opening and closing hours. And somewhere around the peak hour is where everybody arrives at work. So the opening and closing times of businesses can be predicted by the arrival patterns of different workers in different industries. So you merge it with the travel time, you create these buffers, and at the end you come up with something like this. And I will show you 24 hours of availability of retail in the Los Angeles. So let's start from the ocean is here, Pacific Ocean. Monica, the freeways that lead you to Beverly Hills and then downtown Los Angeles. If you know the area, you should be able to, and LAX is somewhere down here. So 1 a.m., the darker the bars that you will see appearing, the more persons in retail are working at that specific location. So at 3 a.m., everybody goes to sleep, as our survey says, and then we wake up. This is automatic. And here is the maximum. And stays for a while, and then people leave from their work locations and go home. Right. So this is the accessibility. So this, if people are available to sell you something, should also tell you that there are certain locations at certain times are more attractive for you to go shopping. And that's exactly what happens if you look also at the pattern of activity location choice and timing, you will find that they're coincide. So this is a very good explanatory variable. But now we need to recreate this for the next 35 years and shift it around and make it. And that's what the land use models should do for us. This is another map of the different accessibility measures. This is almost like a validation, and it tells you retail at nighttime. And notice that along the freeways, retail at nighttime is high and easily accessible, obviously, because that's where the gas stations are and the 7-Elevens and so forth. We can do more than that with something like this. We can superimpose the routes, public transportation. The routes, I think, follow the freeways. That's why you can see them along this. And then you can have the parcels and assign to each parcel some kind of accessibility indicator. So the detail is extreme. We have the data. Even for the huge region like this, we're not using it. We are not using it in a smart way. So why should we go and bother doing all this? Well, first of all, policy tells us. The land use policies in California right now is called Senate Bill 375, dictates the change of land use. They are not telling you, you may wish to change your land use to benefit the environment. I don't know if we will succeed in doing it. I see Elizabeth looking at me smiling. But it's a dictate. It's not, oh, please do it if you want. If you don't do it, there will be consequences, right? Yes. I like that smile. But we need to do it. We need to have it in our models, and we need to be able to create frameworks that are sensitive to that. So where is the integration needed? Well, we need integration at multiple levels. We need to be able to show special shifts and change in economic activity, and what does that mean for activity opportunities. We need to have to show special shifts and change in employment, and then how work opportunities and residences and school locations change, and we do that at a higher level, long-term choices. Immigration and out-migration has a lot is influenced by where jobs are. And the jobs for immigrants do not appear with a systematic way in specific places that we know. So really what we need is a time-sequenced, spatio-temporal evolutionary system. And I don't think there is any disagreement that we need some kind of consistent system all the way from the land use to the assignment or the routing. We do not have it. And we are suffering with this.
Later on, we'll talk about computational and how you go about all this. Let me switch to another item, and I'm not going to go through all these nice words. I assume everybody knows the Hangestad prism, time-space. So the footprint of the time-space prism is called potential path area. So if you were to do it in three dimensions, you can build a time-space prism from home to work of a person. And then if you were to make this footprint of the prism sensitive to network speed and availability, you get a somewhat of a node-shaped area within which people will participate in activities. Well, this happens to be the buffer that we saw before. And if you enumerate within this area the number of opportunities that people have, so you can get all the Starbucks coffee, then you will know that if I go from here, here, I can stop here for a Starbucks, here, or here, and that will explain my propensity to have coffee on my way to work. So this is if you were to do the typical accessibility that we saw before, that is anchored at one location, you get an area like this, and you can enumerate the opportunities. If you do it along a corridor, you get an area like this. If you do it in the evening on the commute back, and you allow for the flexibility of departure and arrival time, then you get a wider area. If you look at arrival at home of people, and the number of activities, you will see that in the evening after 5 p.m. in the United States, people participate in more activities, and that's because they have more flexibility. So the environment has to be modeled to be able to account for the fact that there are opportunities, people take advantage of these opportunities, and they do schedule their activities during those times. So if we were to do this in a big area like Los Angeles, you get this chain of activities, the travel time matrix, which actually was computed using, I'm not doing advertisement, Transcad, from 203,000 zones to 203,000 zones. I don't know how you did it, but it worked. So, we computed the potential area, and we ended up with something like this. So if you have a time-space prism of 55 minutes, this is home, this is work, this is the area that you can access within those 55 minutes, and with a very, very small amount of time left for activities. If you have, this is the bar that shows that you can spend 0 to 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes. The darker it gets, the more time you can spend for an activity duration. And then 65 minutes gives you wider area and many activities along the center of the route, 75 minutes even more. And if you put a constraint that you have to participate in this activity for at least 20 minutes, then you delimit the area in a different way. So this is one way for delimiting destination choice regions and then enumerating them and not have to search all over the place or do a random search throughout the whole city. So it can help. If we do this and we enumerate the number of businesses, so the purple is 75 minutes, the green is 75 minutes with 20 minutes of minimum activity duration. You can see now that we can enumerate accessibility to businesses, how many of those are open, and how many employees you're reaching. And then the same for the smaller area, which imposes the constraint, and the same for this. And this brings us to another point. Okay, we need to know the constraints and enumerate them. We have to have an urban landscape that actually is able to give us the amount of opportunities. But when we have shopping, it can be shopping for groceries, shopping for clothing. So on the left-hand side are the grocery stores, and the regional shopping centers are on the right-hand side. And you can see that there are plenty of grocery stores, either with a small prism or the big prism. But then when you go to the regional centers, there are much smaller in number. So this is the type of information we need. This is the type of integration with land use models, we need points, not just amount of employees in retail industry, because that's the output I get out of land use models, but which stores are going to be where in 20 years from now. That's true integration, not fake. This is more than just to impress you with nice pictures. There is also a different, the key, yeah, this was not to impress you, this is a different story. This is the, we have the land use, we have the type of land use, we want to enumerate all that, but we also want to know how many we can reach by different times of day. So if you do have precise travel time on the network by time of day, the shapes of these footprints will change. So we have two dynamics here. One is the travel time is dictating the shapes of these polygons, and the availability of the stores will change the content of within these shapes. So that's the integration that we need. One is coming from the land use. The other one is coming from the travel time is coming from the assignment. So we need to marry them in one way or another. And the third aspect is this. Actually, the nature of places is not only what activity you can do there, it is not only how fast you can get there, but also with whom you do the activity. And if you focus, this is from actually State College, Pennsylvania. If you focus on this little square and you compare the and different colors are with the period within which its activity was pursued, and you compare this, which is being alone in activity, this with family, and this with friends, you will discover that the same set of locations are accessed with different people at different times of day to do different activities. So this area here actually is where the State College bars are. Obviously you don't go to the bar. Well, some people do go to the bars alone. It's not very pleasant. You definitely don't go to the bars with your family. Not my daughter, she's 16. But you go with friends, right? And different locations have different nature. So the bottom line is you might say, I'm going to the shopping mall. You are not going to the shopping mall only to, you know, we know that, only to shop. But also if you say, I'm going to the restaurant, you might go to have a business meeting. You might go because you are having a field trip, or you might go because you are having a drink with a friend. And so the supply, I don't like the supply, the use of the word supply, but the supply, the location, the place, will have to have multiple dimensions. It cannot be just a restaurant where you eat. No, not only eating meals, but you can have a meeting, right? So that's the we don't have that. We do not have that classification. We have to build it. Nobody will give it to us the way we want it. So a few findings. We know that spatial distribution of alternatives locations has impacts on behavior. The temporal dimensions of behavior also has impact on the spatial extents of the choice sets. Either we enumerate them or we display them as a continuous choice. The nature of the activities that are distributed over a space have many different temporal dimensions that we do not account for yet. Flexibility might make some alternatives more or less attractive. The opening and closing hours, for example, of retail pretty much makes Los Angeles look like having an equal accessibility throughout 24 hours. Or at least the wake-up hours between 2 a.m. and midnight. But many other activities actually are much more restrictive than we might think. We can account, we have to account them in a simulation model in order to get the true reply to staggered work hours, to flexibility in working hours. Otherwise, we get this amorphous 20% change in mode if you do something like staggering work hours. Well, yeah, came. And some other things that we're working on is human interaction. We have discovered just by mining the data that there's quite a bit of task allocation within the household. And when one household member faces very good accessibility to shopping, we see that that household member takes a lot more shopping activities than the other one, and the other way around. But men and women actually face completely different accessibility because they have completely different patterns. And if you have the dynamics of accessibility included in the models, you can capture that. And the thorniest problem, I think, for me to work on would be this subjective perception of space. This is coming from typical geographers, mental maps. Time and time again, for the past 50 years, geographers have shown, in terms of spatial cognition, that we are all very, very different about how our representation of the outside environment, all of us. Some people classified us into map-based people and landmark-based people, but apparently this classification is wrong, which means actually what is out there and what we consider might be so different that make our behavior very, very different. And these are the integration needs. Some of them are repeated, but one additional issue is when we talk about travel times, we go after the travel times on the highways, which is cars and trucks. We do not talk about travel times by bus. I have maps with me to show you one of the most extensive bus system in California is downtown Los Angeles. And accessibility, when you count the opportunities you can reach within 20 minutes, is very, very different by public transportation than by car. Explains a lot of the localized phenomena we see. So we forget transit very, very often. I know Ram doesn't, but that's the other part that we need to include. And final point is, in all this, we never talk about attitudes. We never talk about preferences. We assume our nice logic, multinomial logic, will explain everything. Well, it so happens that when you look at sense of place and other attitudes, it does not. So that's, and I don't know what integration does that require, but we need to do it. All right, so I'm going to close with the computation. We experimented with this, I believe has 86,000 links, which is not that big of a network. We experimented with synthetic population generation. It took days. We experimented with running synthetic schedules. It took days. We experimented with static assignment. It took days. So days here, days there, days there. Well, every scenario needed 12 to 14 days to finish. So thank goodness there are such things as clusters and multi-core clusters and Linux supercomputers that NSF has supported. So our current version of the model that we used to take days is taking half an hour. But we still have bottlenecks in the system. And one of the bottlenecks is not actually getting the software to run on a 40,000 core machine. The problem is that every input that you prepare to give to the software, every output, requires human labor. And it requires preparation and checking. And especially when you simulate 18 million people, and maybe you chunk it into multiple runs, you want to make sure everything, when it comes out of the machine, makes sense. And sometimes it does. And you, of course, you can run, create batch files, etc. So really, one core application for us as a need would be, I'm biased because I talked already with the Argon gang about Polaris. So one idea would be to actually have a core software or a core language that is able to do some of the modeling we want to do and then have modules that feed in to avoid all this input output and checking this and checking that, with the utilities being able to do all of the above. And I know this can be done. This is an army of agencies and people that worked on this. And with this, thank you.
Questions and discussion? For Costas and the demand side perspective.
Can you speak about the environmental laws? I'm not sure if I understand, but the schedule of the laws is more or less fixed than
No.
The lands maybe.
No. So okay. Thank you for asking this question, because where is it? Somewhere down here. I'll show you. It's we take these are the routes in Los Angeles in the SCAG area, and these are the bus stops. We take the schedules, and we take all the different origins and come up with a walk time from every point to the closest bus stop, and then take the schedule of the bus, and we build something like this. So this is the network detail of the buses. This is the origin. So this is the bus stop working time, and then you take into account the schedule, and through shortest path, this is the algorithm. There's a paper that Tingley, we build these isochrons. So from this point, how many places can you reach within a certain amount of time, accounting for all the different routes, and you can move from one route to another, and at the end of the day you build something like this. I don't know if you can see it. At the very top is the maximum number of reachable retail employees in downtown LA within a 20-minute buffer in the four time periods of the four-step model. So this one is for public transportation, and this is by car. And the darker the image, the darker green, the more people you can reach for retail. So this tells you that actually the buses at night create deserts. You cannot reach them, period. But the cars, you can reach them. So you take into account the route, the headway, and you allow people to go from... So it's like assigning passengers to buses.
Also, these route times that you mentioned are for what percentage of population?
The what?
Are you running 100% of population?
For the run times? Oh, yes, all 18 million.
All 18 million.
Yeah, actually, we even run the...
Network also running on all 18 million? For the network also, you're running for the all 18 million?
The network is the static assignment. So yeah, for the network, yes. Actually, we try to run Matsim for 18 million.
Matsim or Transim?
And so Transim is all 18 million.
All 18 million.
Yes. And it does take, the router of Transim takes 2 days. Well, actually, the trick, it takes a little bit shorter. But the simulation takes forever. But the simulation ideally should have all the signal settings.
On the microcirculator side, there is...
Okay, your guys are not running them.
We're trying. We cannot take full advantage of the parallel process.
Yes, because of the interaction. But it's a question of coding.
Well, they would just have...
You would be a good person to answer
that.
So for the question side, actually, it's routing and the microsimulation, which is a route assignment, for 25% sample.
That's
the problem with
NASA, because
we don't
use NASA, doesn't have
the
microsimulation.
It has a queuing model.
It's queuing, yeah. So the microsimulation is quite faster, but you have the iterations for the route optimization.
Here.
Costas, I have one methodological question about multimodal accessibilities. And I'll tell you what, in our experience, in large metropolitan areas, like, for example, New York or Chicago, where it's essentially multimodal, even if you want, you cannot.
Yeah.
Transit might be actually more important. So, like, looks like there are two ways, many technical, details, but two ways. One is to try to create a single multimodal measure of impedance, like low log sum or choose something, and then create one measure that would incorporate everything seemingly. And it works, okay. But there is, we tried a different approach, is, and it's theoretically even more consistent to do it this way. To, you know, like you would have seeming like hierarchical structure of choices behind that. But we tried a different one, just to operate with different measures, like create, you know, transit accessibilities, auto accessibilities, and non-motorized accessibilities separately. And in many respects, what we see in practical terms, this actually works better.
Yeah,
a lot of activities are just explained by non-motorized. So basically, you can have different measures of accessibility by modes, and it might not be a good idea to mix them. So what's your experience? And
we do not mix them except when they go into the utility function of choice.
Yeah.
So and this is the preference for this is because it has a, it's a simpler measure. It does not account for behavior. It tells you. You're here within 10 minutes, what can you do? By a mode. So it is closer to measuring the environment and less measuring the behavior as a reaction to the environment. Is it better than a log sum? Well, there are two different animals, actually. The log sum accounts for behavior. The log sum accounts, okay, you chose this places, here is the sum of the utilities, that of the places, right? Or if it is a destination combined with mode.
So I'm talking about here, for example, we're trying to explain number of shopping trips.
We don't put them into one sum. They are indicators of the environment, not indicators of the behavior. Right? If you see accessibility as an indicator of the environment, then you should have accessibility measuring different modes, and even in different ways. In fact, we do it. We say number of bus stops surrounding a home location, right? Or what is the distance to the closest bus stop? That is another way of access to the mode measured differently than the mode cap. We implicitly we do this different the way you advocate. We just don't realize we're doing it.
But why would you do all this? Eventually, you would like to have some
for all the modes. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I can tell you one mode, for example, that we have in the university that is totally neglected, and that's the skateboard. And students commute to campus on skateboard. How do you measure that? The travel time of skateboards? It is faster than walking. It is sometimes slower than a bicycle. It uses a different network. And how prevalent is it in the United States? Are we going to study, you know, California policy for skateboards? No, but this is one example of that. Bicycles, did I ever say anything about bicycles? That's a completely different network, right? You have the And the behavior is different, and the travel times are different, and the waiting time is different. The other part that is related to this, if you have a different network, different performance characteristics of modes, you are accessing different opportunities. And the bicycle is very nice, because you're using a bike path, and at some point you hit the urban environment, and now you are sharing the same accessibility with some of the cars. So the destinations that you're going to choose are going to be similar to the cars when you hit the urban environment. But when you are on a bike path and the car is along an arterial, the user of the car is facing a different set of opportunities than the biker who is on the bike path that goes to the park. So your destination choice will be different, right? For activities. The spur of the moment, flexible activities, or whatever we say. So they have to be. We have to merge the land use information with the network and the routes to come up with accessibilities that really represent what people that travel face as opportunities to pursue activities. If we want to have point by point activity location predictions.
think of how a lot of times people actually choose activities because there's clusters of potential things, or choose certain routes because there's clusters of other available opportunities, which is, or certain modes even, because there's other things. So how does, it sort of seems like you're assigning sort of a priori what the opportunities would be, but I guess there's a feedback mechanism eventually. So
no, you don't, this is just, what you see here is just a map of what exists out there. There's no assignment. The only, you just compute buffers of 10, 20, 50 minutes, and you enumerate what is around this buffer. So this is the explanatory variable of the behavior.
No,
not the behavior itself.
How does that then, I guess, does that phenomena then get captured in the actual behavior representation of?
Yeah, then you use this as an explanatory variable for the choice model. And then the some of them will be significantly different than zero. Some of them are not. I can tell you that actually, for the car choices, what is significantly different than zero are the peak hour number of opportunities that people face.
And there's different impacts from different types of accessibility. There's actually negative accessibilities too.
Yeah, there are different. There are different impacts on behavior because there are different behavioral
functions.
But there is also another part, and this is the choice set generation. When you do that, you can enumerate for destinations which choice set to consider. Does it work any better? I cannot tell you that yet.
All right. I think in the interest of time, we will move on to the supply side perspectives. Again, we don't have a formal break, but I don't know if people wanted to maybe just take 5 minutes before we get into the next two presentations, and we'll try to catch up a little bit. Okay, so just 5 minutes. Please do come back in 5.
Coffee is over.
Get it.
I'll try now.
No, it's only 10 seconds.